Ok, Joey C.
Romans chapter 15, please. So as some of you know, Kristen and I just made a move. We moved from Colorado Springs up closer to Denver. And that move was necessitated because I got a job change. And commuting in an hour and a half each way wasn't working out. And so we moved. Now going into that decision, not just the move, but really the change in employment, was somewhat of a scary thing for me. I've been thinking about it, and big life shifts take you out of where you're comfortable and move you into the unknown. So, thinking about that decision, something that really came out was a comfort of knowing God has a future plan for you. And you can take solace in knowing that what God has done for other people in the past, He's willing to do for you. And an unsure future, in the worldly sense, isn't such a bad thing, because we have a sure God who's going to be with us in the future. So I wanted to share about that a little bit today. And the core of this teaching was inspired at the Men's Advance this year when Andrew McGarry taught. And if those of you who were there, you might catch the similar point. But it meant a lot to me because when he shared it, it's this brief point in his teaching, but when he shared it, it encompassed, really, in my mind, the fullness of the decision we had made over the last several months of going into this phase of uncertainty. And so I wanted to share that with you guys. Romans chapter 15, verse 3 says, "For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is what?
Written."
Yeah, as it is written, "The reproaches of them that reproach thee," and that's "thee" there is referring to God, "fell on me," and then that "me" would prophetically be referring to Christ. Now, this comes from the 69th Psalm, and what's really interesting is this is the context for the next verse. And some of you might be familiar with the next verse, but as I was reading it, it really brought out a lot about Christ's thought processes about an unsure future. Verse 4, "For whatsoever things were," what?
"Written."
"Aforetime were" what?
"Written."
"For our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope," sure future. It's really interesting because it doesn't say everything that happened before was for our learning. What it brings out is everything that was written in scripture aforetime was for our learning. And the way that God constructed the Old Testament, the way that God constructed the Bible, was so that we could read it and learn from it. And learn something not just about a history lesson, because that would be anything that happened before time was for our learning. But the things he had written down illustrate something about the things we go through in life. So, when it says, "For even Christ pleased not himself," in verse 3, "but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell on me, for whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, like Christ, that we, through patience and comfort of the scriptures, might have hope." When Christ read the Bible, when Christ read the 69th Psalm, he saw comfort and hope in a sure future, because he saw what God had done for people in the past. And he understood by scripture how his life was affected, learning from what God had done for other people and that God would be there for him. And that's the same thing we have, is we have comfort in scripture. We have the example of Christ, so that when we face uncertain future, we can read about what God has done for other people in the past and learn from it. In light of that, let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 6. This year at the family camp in California, this verse really struck me as important personally. It became a part of a teaching I did out there, but really I've been thinking a lot about it. When the opportunity comes up, I talk about it. So this one stands out just in this similar vein. Verse 16. Thus says the Lord, stand ye in the ways, and see, and ask for the old paths, where is a good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. Now this verse is very, very interesting, because it's referring to the various paths and ways of life. And as you might know, there's all kinds of different ways you can go. For me, when I was deciding between jobs, is stay on the path that I was on, the one that was familiar, the one that seemed easiest. And then there was another path. So I was standing in the ways and looking. And that's what God implores his people here to do. So he says, look at all the different ways you could go in your life. Stand ye in the ways and see. Now, how do you see? There's a lot of different ways to see your future. The sure future, the uncertain future, the worldly future, the whatever. The future TV tells you you should look for. So you can see all the different paths that there are, but then he has this great insight. God has this great insight for his people. He says, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein. Now, the concept behind this is perfect, because an old path, referring to a way that you might go, say, through the wilderness, is not the path because somebody decided it was the path. You know, it wasn't the corridor that the civil planners were like, yeah, this is good enough, like, let's just go that way, tear down that house, you know, fill in that lake, and then we got a straight shot from here to wherever. But an old path, the old ways, the good ways, weren't originally started by people. They were started by animals. Is that animals, when they were trying to navigate through the wilderness, found the best way to go and went that way. And then as the animals went that way over time, it wore a path. And that path is then what people would be like, hey, this is an easier way to go. Look, it's already cleared for us. And then they would go that way. And maybe, you know, people have better tools. It's like, hey, that limb's in the way. Let's cut it out of the way. And they improved the path. And then the path, maybe later, somebody's like, hey, let's pave this. It would be much nicer to walk on if we went this way. And so it becomes the old path, the way that people have gone for a really long time. But it's not just good because it's old. It's good because it's the right way, the way you're supposed to go, the best way to navigate through life. And so that's the analogy being drawn here. So there's all kinds of ways to go through life. But there's a way, a well-worn way, a way that's the right way to go because it's the right way to go. Look for that. Find that. Walk that way. And ye shall find rest for your souls. So that's the end destination, is the right destination, the place where you find rest for your souls. Now, the last part of this verse is the people in who Jeremiah is talking to are like, no, we're just going to go this other way and see what happens. So it doesn't work out very good for them. But the advice is still good. Find the right way to go. How do you find the right way to go? You look at what God has said. You know, this book is really old. You guys know that? This book is really, really old. Like, the New Testament part of it is 2,000 years old. The Old Testament part of it is older than that. It's really, really old. There's a lot of really, really old things that survive till today. Not a whole bunch, but some things that are really, really old. But why is this the way? The old path, the good way. It's because it was the right way to go for all people for all time. And it's the well-worn way because as people walk it, they find the good rest for their soul at their destination. So we don't just follow the Bible because it's old. That'd be a stupid reason. We follow the Bible because it's the good way, and it tells us something about where we should go in life. All right, Exodus chapter 15. In thinking about what benefit can we get from learning from the things that were written before time, the old times, the old ways, how did people experience life, and what decisions did they make, either with or against God, how did that work out, and then how did that affect me and my choices? How did that describe the choices and the comfort I could have moving forward? And how might it affect you guys when you have to make choices too? So Exodus 15 is the record where Moses parts the Red Sea. I hope I wrote this down right. I certainly did not. It might have been 14. Thank you, Jim. Exodus 14, verse 21, famously, "And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were" what?
Divided.
They were divided. Charlton Heston got it right. This is what happened. Verse 22. "And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left." Now, skipping forward, there's some Egyptians get really hosed. It's a water pun. I don't know. That's close. Close enough. Verse 29. "But the children of Israel walked upon dry ground in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the shore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant," who?
Moses.
Now, let me ask you. Coming out of Egypt and going into the wilderness, this is a miraculous thing that happens. So miraculous, in fact, that throughout the Old Testament, God keeps referring back to it constantly for hundreds of years later. He's like, "Hey, remember I brought you out of Egypt? Hey, remember I brought you out of Egypt? Hey, remember that time I parted the Red Sea and you guys walked through on dry ground? I brought you out of Egypt." God keeps reminding them. This is a major event. They walked through on dry ground. Winds blew the sea apart. And they walked through. How they could walk through with that strong of a wind blowing is also amazing. Jim might have something to say about it. Okay.
The wind didn't stop by the time
you went. All right, there we go. So anyhow.
Because you wouldn't have been able to.
Oh, I was just assumed it was behind them, and like they went through really, really fast.
He blew them over.
Got it. All right. Not exactly the point I was making, but anyway, good to be accurate. Now, where did they end up when they were out of Egypt?
Wilderness.
The wilderness. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that their final destination?
No.
Was it good for them to leave Egypt and go into the wilderness? Damn right. Yeah. Did God do something miraculous to get them there?
Yes.
Did God do something to get you where you are in a miraculous fashion? Maybe. Is it right for you to be there forever? Maybe not. Let's look. Numbers chapter 13. Numbers is the fourth book of the Bible. It's a book you can really count on. You're welcome. We're talking about fear about the future and taking comfort in what God has done for other people so that we can learn from it and move forward with hope about what God will do for us as we move into unsure land. So out of Egypt into the wilderness. God didn't want them to stay in the wilderness. He did want them to come out of Egypt, by the way. That was the first step on their path. God had a final destination that would be better for them, but they have a little bit of a problem getting there. And that's recorded in Numbers 13, verse 27. "And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it." So this is a report from the spies that went into the promised land, the land where God was eventually trying to get Israel to through the wilderness into this promised land. And they come back and like, yeah, it's exactly like you said. It's awesome. It looks like a perfect place to be, but there's a few catches. "Nevertheless," verse 28, "the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled, and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there." Those are giant, warlike people. "And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites. dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. So more or less, hey, great place to live, but no vacancy. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we are not able to go up. Didn't you hear? Giants there, people everywhere, no vacancy. We're not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. Their destination has some serious concerns. Think of it that way. Verse 32, and they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And I want to kind of focus you in on this phrase. It's not that there's just bad people there. It's not that there's just giants there. The evil report of these spies is going farther to say it's not just the people, it's the land itself. And the land itself eats people up. I don't know exactly what was going in their mind when they said that, but they're painting a bleak picture. Sure, it's got milk and honey, but watch out for the land. It might chomp you up. And all the people that we saw are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So this evil report comes with all these, mostly about giants, like, hey, there's giants there. By the way, did I mention there's giants there? And by the way, those giants are still there. Like, that's what they're harping on. It's really interesting to me. Andrew brought this up at the men's advance, that it says that the land itself swallows the inhabitants. This report fueled people's unbelief. And as a result, the children of Israel don't go into the promised land. They get stuck in the wilderness. So they had this progression, this great progression. They'd seen great things. God brought them out of Egypt, parted the Red Sea, dry ground, destroyed their enemies. They're in the next phase of their life where they're supposed to be, where God brought them miraculously. And then God says, this next step, go here. Well, wasn't this good enough? I mean, God brought us here, right? Like, why can't we just put down roots? And then some of them were like, oh man, Egypt was still pretty good. Can you part the sea so we can just go back? But what God wanted for them was to keep going. Not that where they were was wrong. Where they were was right. But it was a step along the way. And there was a future that God had intended for his people that they became afraid because of all the things they saw at their destination. All the unsureties that they saw that kept them from wanting to keep going forward. And so part of that was the land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. Let's flip forward to Numbers 16. So they don't go into the promised land. So bad things start happening as they're stuck in this wilderness. And this thing called the Rebellion of Korah happens, which a few months ago we talked about that. I'm going to just draw out an interesting point that happens at the end of the Rebellion of Korah. Verse 28. And Moses said, okay, so basically what's going on with this Korah guy is he's really popular. He's got a lot of people who like him a lot. And he's, you know, kind of a famous guy who thinks he can do what Moses does. So he goes up to Moses and says something like, Moses, we'll put you in charge. Well, you're not better than me. You're not better than all these guys who are with me. Like, why are you leading? Wrong thing to say. God, the real reason is God put Moses in charge, so Korah's rebelling against God by saying, I should be leader. Well, he's popular. Maybe he should have been leader, right? From worldly point of view, it's like, hey, he looks better, speaks louder, doesn't speak with a stutter. That's a big benefit. And, you know, he's real. Everybody sees him and is like, that's a great guy, that Korah guy. Yeah, he should lead too. A lot of people follow him along. Well, this is the response. Verse 28. And Moses said, hereby ye shall know that the Lord hath sent me to do all these works. So it's not because Moses is great. What he's saying is, there's going to be a sign that God put me in charge. Not because of anything about me, but because of everything about him. For I have not done them of mine own mind. if these men die, so now he's talking to Korah and his company of people, if these men die, the common death of all men, that means like get old and die, get sick and die, like, you know, fall off of something and die, that would be the common way that people have died throughout history. If the men of this company die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. So if they're just going to die normally, then that's proof. I'm just regular Joe Schmo Moses, and I'm not that special. And yeah, they're right. They probably could be leader better than me. But, verse 30, if the Lord makes a new thing, or I like the center margin, it says creates a creature, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. Like, I think of, what was that pit in Star Wars? The pit that they try and throw Luke Skywalker into with the mouth.
And, oh,
right. Yeah, I think of that. It's like he created a creature, and it's the earth, and it's going to swallow him up. It's like, that's the vision I get anyway. But he's saying, like, okay, here's the proof. If they die normally, they're right. Like, and that would mean, like, they're going to live for a while because they're going to die normally. But something new's going to happen. The earth where they're standing is going to swallow them up. The amazing thing about this section is it's after Numbers 13, Numbers 16. Book you can count on. There you go. Numbers jokes. I'll figure them out. Don't subtract from my humor. It's really adding something here.
All right.
Yeah, awesome. But the fear that they had about going forward into the promised land is the exact thing that happens to these people when they stay put in the wilderness. They had the fear of the land itself swallowing up the inhabitants in their destination. But what they didn't realize is the thing that they feared about moving forward with God is the trap that was laid for them in the wilderness. And so as they got stuck, the fears about the future happened to them. Now, I thought of this when I was, not this exactly, but this illustrated the thoughts that I had about moving on with my life, about moving forward. Did God bring me to Colorado Springs? Absolutely. In miraculous fashion? Absolutely. Was that his ultimate destination for me? I thought so. But then there was another step, a place to move forward. And thankfully, it's not very far. I'm glad to come down and see you guys. It's 20 minutes farther to get here. It's a piece of cake. But as I thought about it, I was like, well, there could be a next step. And I don't want to hamstring God because I think that where he brought me in the past is of itself just the end of the line. Because that God has next steps for his people. Now, the other thing that was the fear component of my future was the job I was in was sold to me as like this steady job. But then it unfolded itself as steady with no life in it. It was like, don't work hard, fine. Don't succeed at anything, fine. Settle, just hit the clock, take a snooze, clock out. Everything's fine. That's how this job's supposed to be. It's how it's always been. And as I realized, like, no matter how hard I worked at it, nothing more got done. How little I worked, nothing less got done. It was just this like soul-sucking, no place to succeed. And the way it kept getting thrown at me is like the place to stop was it's a sure place, reliable job. You'll never get laid off. You'll never get fired. And what I realized is that's the same comfort prisoners have. It's like you will have your meal, but you're stuck in prison. There became this fear of like, well, what if I go back into a marketplace that's highly variable? What if I go back into a place where it's work hard, succeed, and God get the glory? That type of environment also came with risks. It came with, I've been laid off from this industry once before in my life. So I'm going back into it. It's like, well, here's the unsure future. The giants that stand between me and what I think God wants me to do. Well, what does that actually mean? I realized that if I stayed put, stayed in the comfortable wilderness where I was, ultimately the fears I had generally about where my life would go would in fact happen to me. Like, I would be stuck, and I wouldn't have the fulfilled life that I believed God wanted for me. And so I knew that no matter what the unsure future looked like, I needed to move forward with God. And when Andrew shared this little bit of insight, it made everything make sense to me. Is that, yeah, the future's unsure. Yeah, the future's hard to get your head around. Yeah, it comes with risks. But God by your side is better moving forward into an unsure future than staying put and waiting for your fears about the future to just happen to you where you are. Psalm 32. Well, how do you know if you're supposed to go that way or that way? Verse 8. God speaking of himself, I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with my eye upon you. So God's looking at you from the godly perspective, from an all-knowing perspective. And he sees your life and he promises to guide you. Now, I can't tell you what you should do in your life. I don't really know. I don't know what your future is exactly. But I knew what God was calling me to do. And I knew he was guiding me in a direction, and it was scary. But realizing that God was taking me that way was confidence enough to go and do it. Hebrews chapter 13. We'll close in Hebrews. Verse 5, let your conversation or your manner of acting be without covetousness. And this word covetousness, I believe, literally means fondness of silver. But it's like greed or love of money is a good way to translate it. But it's, don't let the way that you act be, or let the way that you act be without a love of money. Which is very interesting, because what does money represent? Money, you know, people say, like, represents power, it represents this and that. But really, ultimately, as I realize, like, having money means, like, tomorrow, at least we're not starving. Right? When you have no money, then you're like, holy crap, I got to make some money because tomorrow we might starve. So it represents, like, this surety about the future, at least a reliance upon yourself about the future. And what it's saying is, don't let your way of acting be one that's, like, you love money. But what is that? It's like a love for what you can manage for your own future. So don't do that. And be content with the things that you have. For he hath said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Or if you guys have a note or a different translation, it might read, I will never leave thee, no, never, never forsake you. Like, God is like hyper emphatic about why you don't need a surety of yourself about the future. Because God says, in the place that you're going, I will be there. As you're going there, I will be by you. As you get there, I will be with you. As you face the giants and the land that swallows people up, you can face that because God is with you. So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Facing the future without fear comes with a reliance upon God. Knowing where you're supposed to go is because God will instruct you. And when you can go that way, you can go that way confidently because God promises when you get there, he will be there and be your helper. Let's close in Hebrews 12. Verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. And if you read back in chapter 11, what this cloud of witnesses is the examples given aforetime. The believers who came before, who experienced life, much how you're experiencing life, had to choose to rely upon God, did, and God came through for them. That's what this is referring to. So we have that example. We have the scriptural text that tells us not just something that's old or people that came from history, but the specific words that God chose were so that we could learn from them. And we can learn something about our lives, the decisions we're making, where we're going. We have those examples. As a result, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily besets us, and let us run with patience the race that is set where? Future looking. Your life is a movement forward. It's a place where you are. It's a place where you're going. And oftentimes it feels like, hey, let's just stop moving. Because, hey, you know, it's a nice little grass patch. I can sit down, you know, have some shade, and life is comfortable. But God is calling us to go forward towards the destination that he's given us. And we can run that race with patience. We can set aside the things which weigh us down because we know that God has come through for people in the past. And as you live more life, you recognize that God has come through for you in the past, and that even though the future might seem scary, the end of the race might seem far off, we can have confidence that God's running right beside us. And then where we started, at least the concept of where we started, verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, so he's a full encapsulation of everything we believe, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So we started with Christ finding comfort in what he had to do by reading the scriptures that came before. We can do the same thing. We can look into the Bible and realize that there's examples that God has chosen specifically that we could learn about our lives. And as we move forward, we see the end of what happened to those believers, and we see the end that happened with Christ. Is he accomplished his mission, even though it was scary, even though it was miraculous, required a miraculous event in the future, even though there was all kinds of things, ground that might swallow him up. He took comfort in the scriptures, believed in his God, walked forward into that unsure future, and is seated on the right hand of the throne of God. Ultimate victory. The ultimate place where he was going, that's how he got there. His trust in God, reliance upon what God had done in the past and what God would do for him in the future. So if you have choices to make in your life, there are scary paths that God might call you to. There might be giants in the way. There might be ground that eats you up. Staying still when God has called you to move forward is no way to live life. Moving forward with God into that uncertainty is, in fact, the most sure thing you can do because God is sure and he promises to be there. Okay? That's it. Thank you.